The train carried him to a perpetual dust storm known as Ephrata, Washington, where there was an air base in the middle of a dry lake bed. The lake bed was on a mission to bury the base, the men, and all of their planes, and it was succeeding. The air was so clouded with blowing dirt that men waded through drifts a foot and a half deep. Clothes left out of duffel bags were instantly filthy, and all of the meals, which the crews ate outside while sitting on the ground, were infused with sand. The ground crews, which had to replace 24 dirt-clogged aircraft engines in 21 days, resorted to spraying oil on the taxiways to keep the dust down. Getting the lake bed off the men was problematic. The hot water ran out long before the men did, and because the PX didn't sell shaving soap, practically everyone had a brambly, dust-catching beard. Not long after his arrival, Louis was standing at the base, sweating and despairing over the landscape, when a squarish second lieutenant walked up and introduced himself. He was Russell Allen Phillips, and he would be Louis's pilot. Born in Greencastle, Indiana, in 1916, Phillips had just turned 26. He had grown up in a profoundly religious home in LaPorte, Indiana, where his father had been a Methodist pastor. As a boy, he'd been so quiet that adults must have thought him timid, but he had a secret bold stripe. He snuck around his neighborhood with bags full of flour, launching guerrilla attacks on windshields of passing cars. And one Memorial Day weekend, he wedged himself into a car trunk to sneak into the infield of the Indy 500. He had gone to Purdue University, where he'd earned a degree in forestry and conservation. In ROTC, his captain had called him the most unfit, lousy-looking soldier he'd ever seen. Ignoring the captain's assessment, Phillips had enlisted in the Air Corps, where he'd proven to be a born airman. At home, they called him Allen. In the Air Corps, they called him Phillips. The first thing people tended to notice about Phillips was that they hadn't noticed him earlier. He was so recessive that he could be in a room for a long time before anyone realized that he was there. He was smallish, short-legged. Some of the men called him Sandblaster because, said one pilot, his fanny was so close to the ground. For unknown reasons, he wore one pant leg markedly shorter than the other. He had a tidy, pleasant, boyish face that tended to blend with the scenery. This probably contributed to his invisibility, but what really did it was his silence. Phillips was an amiable man and was, judging by his letters, highly articulate, but he preferred not to speak. You could park him in a crowd of chattering partygoers and he'd emerge at evening's end, having never said a word. People had long conversations with him, only to realize later that he hadn't spoken. If he had a boiling point, he never reached it. He rolled along with every inexplicable order from his superiors, every foolish act of his inferiors, and every abrasive personality that military life could throw at an officer. He dealt with every manner of adversity with calm, adaptive acceptance.